Appeal from the U.S. Supreme Court decision, making this a Christian nation. Chapter 5. Christian Politics. The Supreme Court decision. The greatest occasion for Thanksgiving. Department edited by William Wire, Washington, Pennsylvania, District Secretary of the National Reform Association. This is a Christian nation. That means Christian government, Christian laws, Christian institutions, Christian practices, Christian citizenship. And this is not an outburst of popular passion or prejudice. Christ did not lay his guiding hand there, but upon the calm, dispassionate Supreme Judicial Tribunal of our government. It is the weightiest, the noblest, the most tremendously far-reaching in its consequences of all the utterances of that sovereign tribunal. And that utterance is for Christianity, for Christ. A Christian nation. Then this nation is Christ's nation, for nothing can be Christian that does not belong to Him. Then His word is its sovereign law. Then the nation is Christ's servant. Then it ought to and must confess, love, and obey Christ. All that the National Reform Association seeks, all that this Department of Christian Politics works for, is to be found in the development of that royal truth. This is a Christian nation. It is the hand of the second of our three great departments of national government throwing open a door of our national house, one that leads straight to the throne of Christ. Was there ever a Thanksgiving Day before that called us to bless our God for such marvelous advances of our government and citizenship toward Christ? O sing unto the Lord a new song, for He hath done marvelous things. His right hand and His holy arm hath gotten Him the victory. Sing unto the Lord with the harp and the voice of a psalm. William Wire. Now can anyone suppose for a moment that this ambitious combination will let slip a single opportunity to take advantage of all that this decision grants, in principle and in substance, when it grants all that they ever asked? If anyone is inclined to think so, let him bear in mind the fact that the petitions which this combination so persistently sent to Congress for Sunday closing of the World's Fair have been so laden with threats of political and other punishments that even United States senators have been obliged, publicly and on the floor of the Senate, to resent it. If they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? Of course, just as soon as they get fairly started, controversies and disputes will arise by which there will be forced in some way, by election, by legislation, or by judicial fiat, a decision as to what particular phase of the Christian religion, or of Protestantism, shall be the national religion. Old controversies which have apparently been hushed for a long time will be revived, and new controversies will spring up. New and old will commingle, and this will take place right early. And, as a matter of fact, the door is already wide open for this very thing if the first steps have not actually been taken in the doing of it. This phase of the matter stands thus. In the first year of President Cleveland's first administration, 1885, his Commissioner of Indian Affairs announced that the government should be liberal in making contracts with religious denominations to teach Indian children in schools established by those denominations. It should throw open the door and say to all denominations, "There should be no monopoly of good works. Enter all of you and do whatever your hands find of good work to do, and in your efforts, the government will give you encouragement out of its liberal purse." The door was accordingly thrown open by the administration, and in walked the Catholic Church and 15 denominations of professed Protestants, who all received encouragement at the following rate. For 1886, $118,343 to the Catholics alone, and $109,916 to all the others together. Throughout President Cleveland's administration, This encouragement was kept up and steadily increased each year until it stood for 1889, $356,967 to the Catholic Church alone, and $204,993 to all the others together. Then President Harrison came in, with General Thomas J. Morgan as Commissioner of Indian Affairs, and proposed to put a stop to this whole system of things and let the churches support their own church schools and teach their church doctrines at their own expense. Yet Mr. Harrison's administration was obliged to confess openly in the U.S. Senate by Senator Dawes that it found it impossible to do that. As it was found impossible to stop it altogether, they proposed to do the next best thing and allow no increase of appropriations to any of the churches. Accordingly, in the annual estimates, no recommendation was made beyond what had been taken the previous year and which it was found impossible to stop. With this, the Protestant denominations seemed to be satisfied. But the Catholic Church simply ignored the administration and went direct to the Houses of Congress and got all the increase that she then wanted. 4 additional schools adopted, with an aggregate of $44,000 of encouragement, making $400,967 in all for the year 1890. When the Protestant denominations found that the Catholic Church was getting increased encouragement when they could get no increase, they raised a cry of raid upon the public treasury and perversion of public money to sectarian uses. Their cry of "Stop, thief!" amounted to nothing, however. The Catholic Church proudly walked off with her $44,000 clear in additional encouragement. Through the whole of Harrison's administration, these Protestants have kept up their cry of "Stop, thief!" And, with the administration against the whole of it, they were so successful as to reduce the appropriations to themselves by the amount of $48,647 in the 4 years, and to the Catholic Church by $31,432 in the same time. So that for the year 1892, the encouragement stands $156,346 to all the Protestant denominations, and $369,535 to the Catholic Church. This is not all, however, and in the rest of the story lies the increased peril and the key of the situation as it exists at the close of 1892. The sequel, so far, is this. From the day that President Harrison announced the name of General Morgan as Commissioner of Indian Affairs, the Catholic Church has kept up a continual warfare upon Mr. Morgan. And as Mr. Morgan was still retained in his place, this warfare was thus indirectly against the administration. But as she could not accomplish her purposes against Harrison's administration, and as the presidential campaign came on with Mr. Cleveland, who had opened to her the public treasury, as the opposing candidate, that threw her influence in favor of Cleveland for president. The following editorial of the New York Independent, September 1, 1892, states the facts as to this phase of the subject. A still hunt. A curious feature of the present campaign is the still hunt now in progress among the Catholics. Our readers know with what persistency the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions at Washington has pursued General Morgan, Commissioner of Indian Affairs, ever since he entered upon his office. They attempted to induce the president to withdraw his nomination and failed. They tried to defeat his confirmation and failed. They endeavored to frustrate his purposes by legislation and failed. They sought to induce the Secretary of the Interior to overrule him and failed. They appealed again to the president, but without success. They attempted to destroy General Morgan's reputation and influence by newspaper attacks, which only reacted in his favor, and served to create a strong public sentiment against both them and their cause. It is seldom that non-Catholics of the country have been so united on any subject as on this. An effort was made in their behalf to defeat the renomination of the president at Minneapolis, which met with a most signal failure. And now a supreme effort is being made to defeat his re-election. A pamphlet signed by one of the officers of the Catholic Bureau, Father Stephan, and addressed to Bishop Marty, another officer of the Bureau, assailing President Harrison, Secretary Noble, and Commissioner Morgan for the Indian policy of the administration, has been printed, and is being secretly circulated, we are informed, especially among the Catholic priests, with a view of defeating Harrison and electing Cleveland. We believe this to be a blunder on the part of our Catholic friends. It is an attempt to carry into politics a sectarian question which does not belong there. There are great national issues of supreme importance to our public welfare, which alone should decide the result of the campaign. And the introduction of this outside issue is deplorable. It is an effort to consolidate the influence of the Catholic Church in behalf of the Democratic Party. Insofar as it is successful in this, it will tend to unite the Protestants in the interests of the Republican Party, and thus to array these two great bodies of religionists against each other. This is certainly not in the interests of either Protestantism or Catholicism, and most assuredly cannot result to the benefit of the latter. The Catholic Standard charged the Independent with slander in the publication of such a charge, but the Independent answered in a way that showed clearly that it was not publishing merely a flying rumor, but from actual knowledge. In its issue of September 15th, the Independent made answer in part thus. The Still Hunt. Our statement 2 weeks ago that there was a still hunt in progress among Catholics designed to prejudice the present administration with voters is denied with some warmth by the Catholic Standard, Archbishop Ryan's organ. It calls our statement a slander, and says that the document to which we refer as being circulated secretly has never reached the office of the Catholic Standard. That may be, and yet it has reached this office, and that it is exactly what we said it was, and that it was designed to be circulated secretly, the document itself clearly shows. It is a pamphlet of 32 pages from the press of Gedney and Roberts Company, Washington. It is signed by J. A. Stephan, Director, and is addressed to the Right Reverend M. Marty, President of the Board of Catholic Indian Missions. Though made in the form of a report to the President of the Bureau, the document is a bitter arraignment of the administration of President Harrison, Secretary Noble, and Commissioner Morgan. It refers to the bigoted commissioner and to the not much less bigoted president. The commissioner is also charged with falsehood, and the old accusations, which were promptly met and refuted at the time, are repeated, and all is written for secret circulation. The effect of setting the two great national parties against each other as the respective champions of the two great religions of the country, which the Independent suggested and feared, was not realized in this campaign, doubtless by reason of the secrecy of this still hunt document. And also for the very good reason that the chief campaign managers of the two great parties, Harity for the Democratic Party and Carter for the Republican, were both Roman Catholics. But Mr. Cleveland was elected. He who was the candidate whom the Catholic Church favored, and who established the system of things which caused that church to antagonize Harrison, he was elected, and has already, since his election, banqueted in private with the Catholic Archbishops of the United States, the Cardinal, and the Papal Representative at the time of their late official assembly. Now, on the other side, the Methodists, in General Conference, May 1892, decided to accept no more public appropriations for their Indian schools. The Methodists were followed in this move by the Episcopalians in their late General Assembly at Baltimore. Such Baptists as had been receiving this money have done likewise, and leading ministers of the Presbyterian Church have been laboring hard to get that body also to follow the example of the Methodists and others. And if they have not taken official action to refuse the appropriations, they may be persuaded to do so at the next General Assembly. When these great Protestant bodies all thus repudiate the system, it is hardly to be doubted that the smaller bodies will do the same thing. But will the Catholic Church repudiate it? Will she refuse to receive such appropriations? Never.
Well then, when the Protestant bodies all repudiate it, and the Catholic Church stands alone in taking public money for church uses, it is inevitable that the Protestant bodies will make a unanimous demand that public appropriations to the Catholic Church shall cease. Then the Catholic Church can reply to all this with the argument made ready for her in this decision, to this effect. The Supreme Court of the United States has unanimously declared that this is a Christian nation. As the starting point and leading proof of this, the court has cited the commission to Christopher Columbus, prior to his sail westward, from Ferdinand and Isabella, by the grace of God, King and Queen of Castile, etc., recites that it is hoped by God's assistance some of the continents and islands in the ocean will be discovered. Now, the religion intended to be propagated by Ferdinand and Isabella was the Catholic religion. The religion which Columbus revered and which he hoped to be the instrument of spreading abroad was the Catholic religion, and that alone. Therefore, as this royal document is adduced as evidence that this is a religious people and a Christian nation, as the only religion contemplated or considered in connection with the document or its purposes was the Catholic religion, as all but Catholics are heretics and not Christians, it follows that the religion of this nation is the Catholic religion, and that this is a Catholic Christian nation. It is therefore perfectly proper and right that the Catholic Church should be supported and the Catholic religion propagated under national authority and from the national funds. This is the argument which the Catholic Church can use at such a time, and the Protestants cannot deny that it is strictly logical throughout. The only thing that they can do is to produce, as an offset, the argument that the Supreme Court, in the same decision, goes on to cite other historical documents which contemplate and even name the Protestant religion. And therefore, it is the Protestant and not the Catholic religion that is the religion of the nation. It may be suggested that the Protestants might base their demand and contention upon the unconstitutionality of the Catholic position. But this would require that they should argue the unconstitutionality of the Supreme Court decision. In itself, this argument would be valid, as we shall see farther on. But, though it be valid, the Protestants could not use it. They have forever precluded themselves from it by having, in union with the Catholics, already made use of the decision to their own advantage. This practically admits the constitutionality of the decision and shuts them off from denying it, even if they wanted to. But that they should want to is not among the probabilities, because the leading Protestant churches are not a whit behind the Catholic in wanting a national religion. Thus the question, what is the Christian religion, would be raised, the controversy would be opened, the contest would be begun. Now, we do not say that this is the way in which this course of things must end. We do not say that this is the way in which this great contest and controversy must be brought about, nor that this is the way in which it will be brought about. We only point to the situation as it exists today, and say that clearly this is a way in which it can be brought about, that herein lies strong probability that this is the way in which it may be brought about, and that, because of this, the situation demands careful consideration on the part of the people. But come about this controversy and this contest certainly will. And when they do, then, with national prestige and political as well as ecclesiastical power and preferment, the prizes to be contended for, all the bitterness and intensity of the old controversies will be revived and manifested. And even these will be intensified. Commotion, strife, violence, persecution, and all the evil accompaniments of an established religion will afflict and even ruin the nation. Even as that former thing afflicted and finally ruined the Roman Empire.
This is why Jefferson, Madison, and their wide-awake associates in Virginia so strongly and persistently opposed the movement to establish the Christian religion in that state. This is why they pertinently and forcibly inquired, "Who does not see that the same authority which can establish Christianity, in exclusion of all other religions, may establish with the same ease any particular sect of Christians in exclusion of all other sects?" This is why they denounced that bill as a signal of persecution, as differing from the Inquisition only in degree, and as the first step in the career of intolerance, in which the Inquisition is the last step. This was all true, every word of it. But if this was true of only an attempt to establish the Christian religion, how much more is it true of this decision, which actually establishes the Christian religion as the national religion, and upon proofs and authorities presented, positively declares that this is a Christian nation? Those noble men, then, saw all the consequences in the principle, and they avoided the consequences by denying the principle. It is certainly true now, as it was then, that all the consequences are in the principle. And as the principle stands established and justified by the supreme judicial authority in the government, so in that all the consequences are established and justified. In short, as certainly as in the Edict of Milan there was wrapped up the papacy, just so certainly in this Supreme Court decision there is wrapped up the image of the papacy. And as truly as the issuing of the Edict of Milan was in principle and in embryo the making of the papacy, the beast, so truly this decision is in principle and in embryo the making of the image of the papacy, the image of the beast. Both are described in their career and in their end in Revelation 13, verse 1 to 17, 14, 9 to 16, and 19, 11 to 21. It is too late now to avoid the consequences by denying the principle, as the principle is already established, and all the consequences are in the principle. Too late, unless the whole people should rise up as one man, and with one voice reject and denounce this decision, as it deserves, in the words in which United States Senator William Pitt Fessenden denounced the famous Dred Scott decision as utterly at variance with all truth, utterly destitute of all legal logic, founded on error, and unsupported by anything resembling argument. Blaine's 20 Years of Congress, Volume 1, page 133. There is no hope of this, however, because the great mass of the people have been for years refusing, and still refuse, to believe that any mischief can ever come to this country from any such principles. While the ecclesiastical combination, which for years has been working to secure the very thing which the decision has now given them, will but redouble their energies in the use of the ascendancy which they now hold by the fiat of the supreme judicial authority of the nation. For these reasons, we repeat, it is too late to avoid the consequences by denying the principle. For the principle stands already established, and all the consequences are in the principle. And the ecclesiastical organization, which has so long been anxious to assert the government as a kind of sovereignty for themselves, will not fail to draw, or even force, from the principle, all the consequences that are in it.